The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's a delight to spend part of my afternoon with you. Thanks for joining me. Coming up in a few moments, I'll share with you a fascinating tale of what happened on Christmas, or at least the advent of Christmas, 1981. It's a great story. That's what, about 40 years ago now. You know, the Soviets, they tried to turn out the lights, but like a candle in the White House window, Ronald Reagan and John Paul II and the people of Poland, they kept that flicker of hope alive. And the Soviet bloc, of course, they waged a war against religion. As we know, it not only failed, but it backfired. I'll tell you a great story coming up. Dr. Paul Kenger, who's an expert, he wrote a book on the Pope and Ronald Reagan. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I promised you a story a little bit earlier, too. And we're just talking a little bit about life, right? We were talking about adoption and the license. I just want to look at this spiritually for a second. I think this is something we don't often look at. Years ago, before I ever got into talk radio, I was doing some production work, documentary work. And there was a crew. I was with a crew. I think we went to, I want to say Kansas City. It was somewhere in the Midwest. And we were outside one of the most notorious abortion mills in the entire nation. The entire nation was horrible, right? And there were a lot of people protesting. Police came. They were, you know, putting the zip ties on people and taking them on the bus. And they were very peacefully protesting. And there was a priest who was in the front of this abortion clinic, and he had holy water. He had the old Roman ritual, and he was praying. And he was praying these exorcism prayers. And as he did, you could almost, it was like a force field went up as cars approached the abortion clinic. And I really believe there was a dark spirit. I think there was something demonic at the heart of this. Windows would roll down, and you would hear the most vile, the most ugly, the most hate-filled, seething words coming out of the mouths of some of these people who passed. You know, other people would beep and wave and say, hey, good job. But there was a spiritual element going on. And I do want to share with you a story coming up. Maybe I'll do it a little bit later, of an exorcist I know who went to an abortion rally and what happened to him. So I'll get to that. But, you know, the point here, and I want to move on, is just at the very heart of this issue. It's not just political. It's not just educational. You know, it has nothing to do about, you know, well, it does. It has to do with the rights of the child. There's a lot of misconception going on, a lot of these things. Ultimately, this is at the very heart of this, a spiritual thing. And it's a great offense against God, and there's great consequence for it. And I think we live, as St. Faustina had written, the Lord told her, we live in the time of God's mercy. And he says, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. But woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. We are in that period of time. The sin of abortion calls down justice. Faustina saw the angel of wrath going to destroy a city that was the abortion capital of Europe at the time. And that's how this chaplet came to birth. Chapel of Divine Mercy was given. She prayed, the angel was mitigated. You know, years later, as the Second World War raged, we saw that city ultimately destroyed. So mighty empires have risen, mighty empires have fallen. Believe me, America is no exception to that. And if we continue to advance a culture of death and embrace immorality, we continue to reject God and his moral law, I'm absolutely convinced that there will be consequence for that type of action. But I don't live in fear. I live in hope. And I really believe there are greater things coming for the future, because of people like you, people like me, people who want to live our faith, who want to be witnesses to the truth, who want to be defenders of life, for networks like Relevant Radio that give voice to the most vulnerable amongst us. So I think great things loom for the future. I think the Dobbs case is going to be critical. But it's a call for us to pray. The rosary is a powerful prayer. It helped to bring down the Iron Curtain. It'll help defeat abortion, just as the chaplet will. And I invite you at night to pray with Father Rocky. He's on at 7 Central. I invite you to pray with me every afternoon at 3. and we'll do our part. All right. I want to change gears and just share with you something else. I want to go back in time, back to December of 1981. I don't know where you were, how old you were, what you were doing, but think back, right? What is that? 40 years now? Is that how long that is? It's wild, right? Where does time go? The world was a very different place, right? The Soviet Union was still around. That was the great threat to the world and to the United States. It was still trying to dominate Eastern Europe. Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States. And, of course, John Paul II had only been pope, what, 3 years now? So 7 months before that, a hired gunman tried to assassinate the pope on May 13th at the behest of the Soviets. That attempt failed. Someone also tried to assassinate Reagan. Remember that? He took a bullet. That failed. I believe there was divine protection in both those cases. Poland at the time was rebelling against the Soviets and their dictatorial rule. And, of course, the labor union solidarity had been legally recognized by Moscow, which was a huge mistake on their part. The communists finally got fed up with the solidarity and the Pope, and they decided to move in. And on the night of December 13th, thousands of Soviet troops entered Polish cities across the country, and they started arresting people left and right. Electricity was cut off to cut communications, and Lech Walesa, who was the Solidarity leader at the time, was taken to an undisclosed location. Kind of frightening, huh? Martial law was declared. The people of Poland were just under incredible oppression, almost like a repeat of the Nazi oppression of World War II. Fortunately, they had very strong advocates. Ronald Reagan and John Paul II, you know, the ambassador from Poland to the U.S. and his wife defected. And when they were meeting with Reagan, they asked him to put a candle in a window at the White House as a sign of support to Poland, which Reagan, he willingly did. But he did more than that. And there's a great article I really want you to read. I mean, this is perfect to read at this time of year. It was called Christmas 1981. Christmas 1981 heralded the collapse of communism in Poland, and it's written by none other than Paul Kengor. He's, of course, the author of his latest book, The Devil and Karl Marx. But he also wrote about, you know, a pope and a president, and that is an absolute must-read. I think it's a great, great read. So check out those books, just a couple of the many that he's written. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Good to be back with you. In fact, I was just thinking about you saying that. I had just turned 15 years old on December 6, 1981, wow. Feast Day of St. Nicholas. And so at that time, I was 15, and yeah, I was in high school in Butler, Pennsylvania, and kind of all I really cared about at that time was playing sports and chasing girls, right? But but there were these great events going on all around us, and yeah, it's hard to believe that was 40 years ago, isn't it?
This is amazing. I don't know how time goes. It just seems to fly, accelerates. I look at our current times, you know, where we have this threat with China rising, its shadow growing longer, and their military capabilities, hypersonic missiles, and what they can do with cyber, and the threats they loom, the nuclear arsenal they're building. But, you know, this time, we're in the advent of what, you know, so many people lived through when the USSR and the United States were in a Cold War, and there was a lot of fear at that point in time. But that was an ugly time. And you go back and you think about the Soviets and atheistic communism. What happened? To bring us back in time, paint that picture with solidarity that the Soviets decided that they could no longer tolerate the Union. What was happening back in that time? Maybe bring us back and lay out some history for us.
Yeah, that's right. So it had been the previous summer in 1980, in fact, August of 1980. And at that time, the Solidarity labor movement had organized. It had been trying to organize for a few years. It was led by Lech Walesa, who ran the Gdansk shipyard, the Lenin shipyard in Gdansk, Poland. And they were trying to organize, and they were very pro-West, anti-communist, anti-Soviet, pro-Catholic Church, pro-United States. Loved Pope John Paul II, were very dedicated to the Catholic Church, and also loved Ronald Reagan. In fact, in one of the rooms in Gdansk, there had been a picture of Lenin, and one of the Solidarity labor leaders snuck in and took down the picture of Lenin and replaced it with a picture of Ronald Reagan. of all things. Wow. So they were organizing, and the communists didn't know what to do with them. And then at one point, when pretty much it became the largest labor union in all of Poland, and that would have been the summer of 1980, about August 1980, they decided to give them the go-ahead, the communist government, and let them organize. And they soon realized that had been a big mistake. They kind of left their foot off the throat a little bit, the communists did. And they, it was kind of a calculated risk. And by the next year, by, let's say, December of 1981, 40 years ago, pretty much everybody and his brother and mother and father and sister was a member of the Solidarity Movement. So this movement was becoming the single greatest source of resistance to the communists, as well as the Pope, the Polish Pope, John Paul II. And we've talked about him before, too, Drew. The chaplain to the Solidarity Movement, Father Jerzy Papayushko, who the communists increasingly came to realize was a mortal threat to them, and they eventually killed him in 1984. But in December 1981, they decided enough was enough, the communists did, and on December 13th, 1981, so 40 years ago, what, about yesterday, this week, they ordered martial law and tried to suffocate, crack down, exterminate, end the Solidarity Movement. They rounded up anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000 people. There were hundreds of casualties. Lech Walesa was taken to an undisclosed location. The entire population had to be in by a certain curfew. There were checkpoints at every corner. All flights in and out of the country were banned. And so, you know, here it was, the great communists, which were all about the workers, they were suffocating the workers' movement. They were trying to end it. And in Rome, the Holy Father was really angry about this. And in the United States, the president, Ronald Reagan, was absolutely livid about it. They immediately started communicating with one another, and they both realized that that the Solidarity Movement needed to be saved.
Wow. So the Holy Father, how was he during all this? He had to be anguished.
He was anguished. He was depressed about it. He was very saddened by it. In fact, Father Jivich, who's still alive to this day, he's now Cardinal Jivich, and he was the one who, another 13, right? On May 13th,
right.
1981, yeah, the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, he's the one that caught John Paul II in St. Peter's Square when he had been hit by two bullets by Mehmet Ali Asha. And at that moment, John Paul II was rushed off to Gemelli Hospital in Rome, almost bled to death. He was given last rites by Father Jivich. Jivich said, it was tearing me up inside, but I did it. I did it. And in fact, the final words of John Paul II before he went out, he said to the nurse, he said, "How could they do it? How could they do it? How could they do it?" And so the "they" here was evidently referring to more than one gunman, right? It turned out that it would be Asha working with the Bulgarians and working with the Soviets, working with the communists. They tried to kill him. So here they were, December 13th, 1981, and Jivich said that the Pope, who had fully recovered by that point, but he was in anguish at what was happening to his home country. And also in anguish was the Polish ambassador, a guy named Romuald Spazowski, and his wife Wanda, who was kind of a closet devout Catholic in Poland. They defected to the United States over the next 10 days. I think it was December 22nd, 1981. And they met in the Oval Office with Ronald Reagan. And then I think one of the most touching, unseen moments, Drew, of the entire Cold War. I mean, imagine this, Oval Office, Ronald Reagan, Ambassador Spazowski, his wife, and Vice President George H.W. Bush. She's crying on the vice president's shoulder, and Reagan is talking to the ambassador. The ambassador is saying, "I can't believe I'm here with the United States, sitting with the president in the White House." And he asked Ronald Reagan, he said, "Mr. President, would you do me a favor? Would you light a candle this Christmas for the people of Poland?" And Ronald Reagan said, "Yeah." He said, "In fact, why don't we do it right now?" So he stood up. They went to the second floor of the White House, and they fetched a candle. They lit it, and they put it in the White House window. And then the next night, on December 23rd, 1981, Ronald Reagan gave a nationally televised speech to the entire country. And he said then and there, he said, Merry Christmas to everyone, but the people of Poland at this Christmas, they're not celebrating because they've been betrayed by their government. And Reagan asked everybody in all of America if they would go to their windows and light a candle for freedom in Poland that Christmas. And millions of Americans did just that. So it was a pretty remarkable time. That was, as I say in my article for National Catholic Register, that was really, as despairing as that moment was, Drew, looking back in retrospect, 40 years ago this month, that was pretty much the start of the collapse of communism in Poland.
Wow. You know, Reagan put the candle in the window. He did a lot. He and John Paul, boy, such pivotal figures. You have a book on the two of them, too. It might be a good opportunity to tell people about that. Just it's such an amazing moment in history, and you have these, you know, figures whose paths cross. A Pope and a President, Doctor. What's the book about? How can people get it?
Yeah, thanks. So you could get it at Amazon, any number of other places. And it was really that December. Now those two men had already wanted to meet one another. Man. And just a few weeks before John Paul II was nearly assassinated, on May 13th, 1981, Ronald Reagan, on March 30th, 1981, was nearly assassinated. So they decided that they needed to get it together, and they finally got together about 6 months after martial law, June 1982 at the Vatican, and they met alone for about an hour in the Vatican Library. And Reagan said to the Polish Pope, he said, hope remains in Poland. He said, in your country, we working together can keep it alive. And they confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives from those assassination attempts for the purpose of taking down communism, and especially starting in Poland, from which they believed they could crack the entire communist bloc. And that's exactly what happened.
Wow. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor, if you're joining us, we're talking about the collapse. Well, an event that led, you know, that marked perhaps the beginning of the fall of the Iron Curtain, the Christmas of 1981. Doctor, how long did martial law last? We know if you're just joining us, the Soviets went in, or they decided to crack down on the Solidarity movement, and they issued martial law. How long was that in effect, and what impact did both John Paul and Reagan have on that?
Yeah, it's hard to pick an end date. It just kind of slowly fizzled out, slowly eased up, slowly lifted. And although, I mean, to some degree, you could say that it never really ended. But by the time of, 1983, 1984, things had eased up. And at that point, they were basically looking for other means to squash the Solidarity movement, including at that point, Drew, by 1983, very heavy surveillance of Father Jerzy Papayushko. And they had also tried to kill, they also tried to assassinate Lech Walesa. They actually tried to assassinate him when he was in Rome. And in fact, that was the eve of Ronald Reagan's inaugural. I think it was January 19th, 1981. I mean, imagine if Ronald Reagan, at the time of his inauguration, had just gotten news out of Rome that Lech Walesa had been assassinated in Rome, of all places, on his way to meet the Polish Pope. So they had tried to get him, and then after martial law, they focused on getting Father Jerzy, which they succeeded in doing. They killed the poor guy, they pummeled him, they beat him to death, and then they tied weights around his feet and threw him in the bottom of the Vistula River in Poland. He had to be eventually fished out a few weeks later. But in a sense, I mean, none of it really ever truly lifted until Poland was able to finally have free and fair elections in June 1989. When they did that, Drew, not a single communist won. The communists lost 100 out of 100 seats, which is why communists never hold elections. Oh. because they know they'll lose if they hold elections. So that was in June 1989. And as Mikhail Gorbachev and others said, you want to know what broke the Berlin Wall? It was those elections in Poland in June 1989. The Berlin Wall came down in November 1989, but what happened in Poland was what really breached the wall first.
Wow. Amazing. What a wonderful story. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. If you want to join us, maybe you lived through it. Maybe you've experienced it. If you got a question, a comment, feel free to dial in. It's 888-914-9149. This happened, Doctor, 40 years ago. Soviet Union today no longer exists. Some might even say it be classified as ancient history with no bearing on what's going on in the world today, but that's not the case, is it? There's a lot of lessons to be learned.
Well, that's right. In fact, I would add here, too, and I wrote a piece on this for the Acton Institute. It's at their blog right now. They made this request to me separately from the piece that I wrote for the Register. It was 30 years ago this December, so December 1991, that the Soviet Union itself collapsed. And really, again, it's almost miraculous, Drew, right? All these dates, you know this from talking about St. Faustina and Divine Mercy, how amazing some of these dates are. But it was Christmas Day, December 1991, that Mikhail Gorbachev called then-President George H.W. Bush, and he said, "I want to wish you a Merry Christmas." He said, "I am shaking your hand over the telephone, and I want to tell you that I'm resigning my position as president of the Soviet Union." And wow. And with that, on that date, that formally ended the Soviet Union, the USSR. So if you're going through the sort of cemetery of history here, right, it's going to say USSR, evil empire, right? You're born October 26, 1917 under the Bolsheviks and right. Died Christmas Day, December 25th, 1991. So, and how poignant is that? It ended on the day that the communists tried to ban Christmas, right? It ended on Christmas Day, of all things. So you know, this December, 1981, 1991, we could look back 40 years ago. This was a really historic, pivotal time. And it tells you, too, that you know, some stories really do have happy endings. It doesn't seem like that often today with all the bad news all around us. But that was a story with a good ending.
It certainly was. My guest, Dr. Paul Kengor. Doc, let's take a short pause. When we come back, we will talk more. You can check out his books, of course, The Devil and Karl Marx, The Pope and a President, Dupes, and many, many others. Our conversation continues right after the short break. Feel free and join us. Get in right now at 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariotti Show, live
at 888-914-9149.
The Drew Mariotti Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be with you today. Thanks for dialing in. We're going to grab a couple of your calls if you are just joining us. I read a piece, and I read a lot of different things. I suggest a lot of different things, but I was really, I guess moved is a very strong word, but I really love the eloquence of the article Dr. Paul Kengor wrote. It's called Christmas 1981, Heralded the Collapse of Communism in Poland. And it tells an absolutely fascinating story. This is a chapter in world history that I think everyone should read and know. I think there are a lot of lessons that we can learn from it. I do believe that if we're not careful, history does repeat itself. If you want to get in, you can join us, 888-914-9149. Doctor, before we move on, let's grab a couple calls. And before I go to the calls, I ask you just one question. I'm sitting here during the break, and I'm thinking about communism. You saw the horrors of it. You know, we saw what happened during World War II and all that followed afterwards, the Cold War, what the Virgin and Fatima warned of in 1970 about the spread of atheism to communism and what it would do. And for a while, we thought, look, the Iron Curtain collapses. You know, John Paul consecrates the world to the Immaculate Heart in 1984 on March 25th. 5 years later, the communism, as we know it, is pretty much, you know, collapsed. And went away with a puff of smoke, you know, and there was no bullets that had to fly, no missiles that had to strike. And yet we see today China on an upsurge. And there are people here in the U.S. who are just enamored by socialism. They're enamored by communism, including members of our Congress. You know, so I want your take on where we are today, because I don't know what it is about this deceptive spirit that is out there that would make people think that socialism and communism lead to any sort of positive end, because no matter what nation, what people embraced it, it has always led to hardship and to suffering. So how do we counter this, and what's your personal view? I mean, you know this better than probably anybody. What's with this love of communism and socialism today, especially by members of Congress and some in our nation?
Yeah, it's really sad, Drew. So, I mean, we defeated Soviet communism, right? But you have it in these new iterations. In fact, you know, not long after Our Lady appeared in Fatima and talked about how communism would spread its errors around the world, there was a new manifestation of communism from something called the Frankfurt School. And that was a fusing of all things Freudianism and Marxism. I mean, yeah, that's just like the two craziest ideas of all, right? The ideas of Freud and Marx. And these guys at the Frankfurt School actually thought, oh boy, this would be great. Why don't we marry these two together? So they come up with what becomes known as critical theory. And critical theory has all sorts of different offshoots in the United States in particular, including critical race theory. And it's really tragic that one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, Patrice Cullors, she's one of the two or three core founders, is she calls herself a Marxist. She said, we are trained Marxists. We are super versed in ideological theories. And critical theory is her thing. Critical race theory is her thing. If you go to the website right now of Black Lives Matter, they have this terrible stuff up there loaded with Marxist rhetoric condemning what they call white supremacist capitalism. Wow. And saying capitalism doesn't love black people. And it's just this horrible mixing of racial stuff with Marxist rhetoric, you know, stuff that I never thought I would ever see in the United States. So these bad ideologies, these pernicious ideologies, have taken these new forms in the United States. We don't have anybody in the United States building a Berlin Wall or trying to organize the proletariat, right? Or using words like bourgeoisie. But we have people talking about oppressed oppressor and now applying it to new categories of things like race. And is it different? It is. But the one commonality, Drew, that's really crucial is it divides people. It pits people against one another. And you read it, you just don't want anything to do with it, right? It makes your skin crawl. Like, I don't want anything to do with this, right? Get the stuff away from me. But it antagonizes people. It puts people against one another. And, you know, to quote Martin Luther King Jr., it does judge you by – Martin Luther King Jr. said, judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Right. This categorizes you by the color of your skin. What was the song by Michael Jackson? Doesn't matter if you're black or white. Remember that one? Mm, right? Sure. Yeah, this says all that matters is whether you're black or white. It does matter if you're black or white. We see you as black or white. We don't see people as made in the image of God. And that's a very kind of Marxist thing where you put people, not in the imago Dei, the image of God, as individuals, but you put people in categories and groups. So this is a really unfortunate manifestation of Marxism where we are today in America.
Let's go to the phones, Doc. We'll start in Madison, Wisconsin. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. Rich, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. Question and a comment. First, relating to Pope John Paul II, shortly after those events, the very dramatic events occurred, I heard from someone, unfortunately I don't remember who it was anymore, but someone who I thought might actually know something about these things, who claimed that at some point Pope John Paul II threatened someone, I don't know if it was the governor of Poland or the Soviet Union, to lay aside his papal crown and actually personally lead an armed revolt in Poland. And I've often wondered if that's true, or what the source of this was. I wonder if you had any idea about that.
Yeah, I have not heard that, but he was, I mean, it really in line with what I just said about Martin Luther King Jr., right? He was all about peaceful resistance, John Paul II was. So was Jerzy Papayushko. But he was very concerned that, and I talk about this in A Pope and a President at length. In fact, one of the reasons I decided to do that book, which I had worked on for like 12, 15 years, I kept putting it off, was I kept getting kind of gems of information from people like this, gems of information like this from people, stuff that had been classified. But he learned that the Soviets, it looked like the Soviets were on the verge of invading Poland. And Ronald Reagan saw that too. And I have a long chapter in A Pope and a President where it looks like the Soviets might have been ready to actually go in. I mean, you talk about providential. Might have been ready to go in on March 30th, 1981, which was the day that Reagan was shot. Right. And according to the source that I quoted in A Pope and a President, I've got a whole chapter in his story. His name was Denny. The Reagan getting shot, which had nothing to do with the Soviets. This was just John Hinckley trying to get the attention of Jodie Foster, of all things. When Reagan was shot and the U.S. went on full alert, and Al Haig, the former Allied commander of NATO, comes out and says, "I'm in charge, I'm in charge." That scared the daylights out of the Soviets, and it made them put everything on hold. So in a kind of, Ronald Reagan always believed that everything happens according to a purpose, according to God's divine purpose. And if it had been that Reagan took a bullet that day, and that might have led to deterring the Soviets from invading, that would be a pretty wild, unexpected purpose. And to quote John Paul II said, for the Christian, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Right. Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Okay. Well, Rich, I hope that helps.
Thank you for putting those things in your book, because those, some of the things you have in your book are things that I had heard only from Frank Shakespeare prior.
Right.
So I'm glad that information came out. One comment about another matter is you talk about critical theory. I'm at the University of Wisconsin, and that's a big thing in some departments here. Communism in the Soviet Union is defeated. But communism in academia is alive and well, I'm afraid. And that's where that's what's keeping it alive.
That's right. Well, this is a great call. And Drew, he's mentioning Frank Shakespeare, who was the second U.S. ambassador to the Vatican. So Ronald Reagan was the first president to recognize the Vatican. And for his first ambassador, he chose his close friend Bill Wilson. And at the time, Frank Shakespeare, who I think is still alive, and he had been an old television executive with CBS. He had been in communications. And he was, I interviewed Frank at length, and he told me some amazing things about Reagan and Fatima. I pulled off the road and, you know, just stopped at a rest stop and just started writing profusely all the stuff that he was telling me. I'd never heard of before. But Shakespeare had been approached around 81, 82 by somebody in the State Department who said to him, Frank, would you possibly be interested in being ambassador to Portugal? And Frank Shakespeare said, you know, if he would have asked me to be ambassador to Britain or France, I'd have been like, I don't know. He said, but Portugal, I immediately thought to myself, Fatima.
That's awesome.
Because Fatima had been a great interest of him since he was a young man. And he said almost instinctively, yes, I would do it. So he became ambassador to Portugal, and then after Bill Wilson stepped down, he became the second ambassador to the Vatican. And he told me about being on an airplane with Ronald Reagan, June 1987, flying to the Vatican from somewhere else in Italy. I think, Venice, I believe, and briefing Reagan on Fatima for 40 or 50 minutes.
Wow.
And he said Reagan was absolutely fascinated, riveted by the whole thing, really interested in it.
That's amazing. Well, Rich, thank you. Good luck with all you've got to do there in academia. I wish you the best, and I'm grateful for your call today. It was great to have
you.
Thank you. Great call. That was a great insight. Let me go to another call. We've got a break coming up here pretty soon, but let me sneak Todd in Lexington. Todd, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. I was reading in The Devil and Karl Marx, the interview that or hearing that Congressman Fish had, where he was questioning William Z. Foster, who was the president of the Communist Party USA, and he didn't hide anything. I mean, he was pretty straightforward about their plan to essentially turn the country into a communist or Soviet style communist state. And I've always thought from that point on where it was that that they managed to by drops, little at a time, introduce things that would turn, well, each subsequent generation more favorably towards socialism to the point where we are now. Because if you change the minds of students and do various things, then as they get to be older, then it's, hey, this is a pretty good idea. And I think that's maybe where we are now. And they did it without firing a bullet.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great call too. He's referencing a question between Congressman Hamilton Fish and William Z. Foster, who was the head of Communist Party USA. Yeah, I have that transcript in The Devil and Karl Marx. It's riveting to hear this stuff. You just can't believe that Foster is openly and candidly saying what he's saying. And after that, Drew, the communists learned, don't be so candid, right? Yeah, the next time you get asked questions like, do you guys really want like the United States to be part of a global Soviet republic? Do you guys really favor a war on religion? Would you really ban religion? So Foster gave honest answers to all of that stuff. And then never again, ever after that, did members of Communist Party USA speak so openly. After that, they all pled the Fifth Amendment at that point. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they started all operating by deception. And it made it particularly easy for them at that point to dupe people on the religious left and say, oh, they're calling us communists. We support social justice, right? We just want to help the working man. And they're doing it today, too, with things like critical race theory, right? Say, no. We just want to fight discrimination. This is about George Floyd. It's just about George Floyd, right? But in the meantime, you know, some of these groups are doing other things that are Marxist rooted or Marxist based. So they've been very good at deception for a really long time, and it's something that seems to be, you know, right out of the manual, right out of the Marxist playbook, if you will.
Yeah. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kangor. Todd Varich, everybody, thank you for your calls. I have to take a short pause, Doc. You know the routine. We'll be back in just a couple moments. There's some stuff going on, Doctor, I want your take on as well right now in Congress, besides the so-called Build Back Better bill. We'll talk about that and more. Stay with me.
All the issues, all the topics, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, I am traveling to the Holy Land in February with our underwriting sponsor, Nativity Pilgrimage. Information is available at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. That's relevantradio.com/Holy Land.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Now, that's a good bumper, Lucas. Thank you. Hey, my producer, Maggie's under the weather. I want to thank Lucas and Nick Sentovich and Patrick Aglog for helping me out today with today's broadcast. Good to have them behind the scenes. And it's great to be here with you. I only have a few minutes left. I'm joined today by one of my favorites, Dr. Paul Kangor. We're talking about a lot of different things. We were talking about Christmas 1981 and the collapse of communism. I do want to talk about something else. There's some things going on in Congress, and one of those was the nomination of Saula Omarova, and she's going to be the comptroller of currency. But that's the job that normally causes, you know, it's not the job that normally causes controversy, I should say. In fact, I don't think anyone can name, I don't know, a comptroller, right? Can you name a comptroller of currency? Who was in the Trump administration or any administration before that? You know, yeah, it's like saying, hey, who won the Super Bowl last year or 2 years ago? Unless it was your team, you probably have already forgotten. There's also another person. Before I get to that, let me just lay out one final thought here on Saula Omarova. Saula Omarova is different because of her viewpoints. I mean, she is basically an unabashed communist. I mean, it's as charitably as I can say it. You know, why the president chose to nominate her, it really is not clear. I'm trying to think, why would you put her in this position? You know, because there's no way that she's going to be approved. I can't see how she's going to be approved. But there's something else going on politically as well. And I think it'll be really fascinating to watch for years. Democrats right now have allied themselves with Hispanics. And it was presumed that just about anyone who came here from the south of the border was going to vote Democratic. That's no longer the case. Rui Teixeira is a political analyst who wrote a book called The Emerging Democratic Majority, in which he said that because of a growing number of Hispanics in the country, the Democratic Party would dominate for years to come, but no more. He now says that all over the country, and you're probably seeing this maybe where you live, that Hispanics are increasingly ditching the Democratic Party for the Republican Party. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor, he's an analyst of all things political and cultural, a prolific writer and a great professor of political science at Grove City College. He's here today to give us some perspective. And Doctor, I want to pick up on that. I was struck when I saw that Democrats are losing Hispanic voters. What do you know, and why is that the case?
Yeah, I'm not surprised, Drew. In fact, I've thought for years that Hispanics were much more of a better fit in the Republican Party, especially given the party's stance against socialism, against communism, pro-life, pro-religion, pro-traditional values. And as a Democratic Party becomes this very secular party and, you know, very radical on social cultural issues, it's not at all a good fit for the typical Hispanic voter, given where Hispanic voters usually stand on religion and other issues. In fact, it's one of the reasons in 2016 I didn't want to do identity politics and that sort of thing, but I was so excited about Cruz and Rubio, not only because I thought that they're both just excellent candidates, and I agree
they're
with
brilliant.
Them on so many different things. Yeah, but they would appeal to Hispanics in particular. As a nominee, Donald Trump would be a disaster in that respect. Trump ended up doing pretty well, though, among Hispanics. And I think especially now as the Democratic Party drifts even more and more in that direction. And, in fact, I would even link this to Omarova, of all things. You were asking, why would Biden pick somebody like that?
Yeah, right.
Because Biden is just – he's just the guy that the radical advisors that he's surrounded himself with – he's their puppet. He's the people. The other people around him are doing the picking. They're doing the nominating. And what blew me away about Omarova, I have met thousands of former Soviet, former Eastern Bloc citizens, people who lived under communism. And Drew, I've never met one who's pro-communist. they hate communism so bad. And in fact, they'll write me letters. I can't believe I immigrated to the United States in 1991, and my daughter is at an American university, and she's become a communist.
Oh,
I can't believe this. Well, leave it to Biden, right, our Catholic president, to find like the one American the one American from the Soviet Union who went to Moscow State University who's still a communist, and nominated for that position. Communism, which our church since 1846, Pius IX and Qui Pluribus, 2 years before the Communist Manifesto was even published, has called evil. For over 175 years at this point. So you're really disappointing by Biden, but I'm not shocked. The man is radical on abortion, LGBTQ issues, energy, all these other Afghanistan, all these other issues. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, it's you're right when you called Biden a puppet, because you take a look at some of these nominations, and I'm thinking, what the heck? You think they'll bring other nominees forward, like Omarova? This radical contingent that seems to be advising him? Is this an anomaly,
absolutely.
Or do you think
puppet,
that we're going to see more of this?
Yeah, puppet wasn't the word I was looking for. Trojan horse, I think, fits better.
I like puppet, too. I feel people are pulling his strings. I really do. I feel bad, almost. And I pray for the president on a daily basis. I really
do, too.
I want this country to be strong and vibrant and moral. And I see the direction we're heading in so many different levels. And I'm thinking like the last place we want to go is a socialistic communist path. If we do, it's going to be nothing but misery and suffering. So you do think we'll see others being nominated like this, but they're not going to get past the Senate, will they?
Well, some of them will. I mean, look at Teixeira, who is head of HHS, some of the other people that he's picked. And right now, I mean, Biden promised to, quote, throw the whole of the government, unquote, against the Texas heartbeat bill on abortion. And that's what they're doing right now. All these abortion cases before the Supreme Court, our Catholic president is putting in place all these people who are trying to fight any limitations on abortion in the United States. And you know, they ran, the Democrats did, this lifetime perceived moderate in Joe Biden, which he once was, like 30 or 40 years ago. He got elected. He got 81 million votes. And now that he's in office, you know, they've opened the Trojan horse and the kind of radical left is running out there. And he's just really, truly going along with whoever his advisors tell him to appoint and whatever they tell him to do. And so, yeah, you're going to see more appointments like this. You'll see even worse. Look what he did with, you and I are both from Pennsylvania, the former Health Secretary of Pennsylvania, Rachel Levine. Made Levine the first transgender high-level federal appointee and even made her, what, a four-star general of all things. It's remarkable radicalism, and it's coming from a Catholic president.
It's so true. Andy McCarthy over at National Review said that there could actually be a method to the president's madness. Mainly, it keeps a radical base in the party. I thought that was an interesting observation. Do you see anything there?
Well, they're going to vote for him no matter what, the radical base. I mean, he really has that in the bag. What he really needs to win elections are people in the
moderates.
Middle. And right. Yeah, but I don't think he's going to run again in 2024 anyway.
No, me either.
So in a way, what this is going to do, this lurch to the left, is it's going to kill the Democrats in 2022. And if the November 2022 was next week, they'd probably lose 70 seats in the House. So I think that the politics of all this for the Democrats is actually very, very, very bad. I think it's very ill-advised. I don't think it's smart politics at all. But then again, I don't think Biden's thinking it through. He's just doing what his radical left advisors are telling him to do.
That's so true. I agree. I think 2022 is going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
It'll be a sea change. And then I think it'll be a sobering, I would assume it'll be a sobering and wake-up call for the Democratic Party. And it'll be really interesting to see who they're going to put to run in 2024. It won't be Joe Biden. It's not going to be Kamala Harris. Some people are throwing Buttigieg's name out there, but maybe somebody else will rise to the fore. So we'll see.
Buttigieg is the son of a Notre Dame professor who's married to a man, has an adopted son, and his father, Joseph Buttigieg, is the American expert on Antonio Gramsci, the cultural Marxist.
Yeah.
Pete helped with that book. And so the Democrats will get somebody. They very well may nominate a man raised at University of Notre Dame who's married to another man. And that I think that right now Buttigieg is probably the front runner for the Democrats in 2024.
Yeah. I mean, he's articulate and eloquent, but boy, what a mess that would be if we four more years of that. Lord have mercy. Hey, doctor, I got to leave it right there. A couple things I want to recommend to people. One, your book, The Devil and Karl Marx. The other, A Pope and a President. Anything else you want to recommend? Of course, we're going to link over to your article as well, but what do you want to get people connected to?
Yeah, that. And check out my current piece on December 1981 at National Catholic Register. And also, I'm a regular columnist for The American Spectator, so you can find me at my article archive at The American Spectator.
Well, thanks for your eloquence. I loved that last article, one of your best. What a wonderful story to read, especially now.
You're too kind. You're too kind.
No, I mean it.
Thank you.
I really do. I mean it. I look forward to our next conversation. I'm out of time for the day, Doc. Thank you for being here. That's Dr. Paul Kangor. Until our paths again cross, count on my prayers. And remember, God loves you. Have a great day.